Today's show is sponsored by Head & Shoulders Scalp Shield Technology. Regular use of Head & Shoulders Scalp Shield Technology provides a continuous invisible shield of protection against dandruff, itch, and dryness, renewing your protection with every wash. Get up to 100% dandruff protection that's never not working with Head & Shoulders Scalp Shield Technology, available at Walmart.
Listen up, everybody. Your fantasy football drafts are coming. It's time to show your league what puny and pathetic trash bags they truly are. The Ultimate Draft Kit from the Fantasy Footballers is the easiest way to annihilate them. Tiered rankings, full projections, sleepers, breakouts, it's got it all. Go to ultimatedraftkit.com and secure yours immediately. I said do it now.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers Podcast with your hosts, Andy Holloway, Jason Moore, and Mike Wright.
Oh, welcome in.
Oh,
it's football time. Yes. Did you know?
Oh, I knew it.
You didn't forget this time?
I did not forget this time. Football tonight, because this time, it's personal.
Why is it personal?
Because that's what a lot of the movie trailers have led me to believe, that this time around, the second time, it's always much more personal.
What makes the first kind of interaction, the first conflict, so impersonal is
what
I want to know.
In the football world, what makes it impersonal is that the Hall of Fame game is the first game, and mm-hmm. that's a wink-wink game.
It's a wink-wink
Yeah, that's game? Oh, yeah, it's an NFL game. Wink.
I gotcha.
sophisticated start to the show.
Always.
With that introduction, which I think might be Brooks's favorite. Was that Darnold Schwarzenegger? Is that who that was?
Yeah, that's got to be my
it's
favorite.
It's Darnold Schwarzenegger.
Thursday, August 12th, the Fantasy Footballers Podcast. Excited to be getting into our running back rankings part two today. Never Not Working, new segment.
We're going to be
everything about winning at fantasy football means taking advantage of every extra edge you can get over your opponent. You cannot, and I'll be the first to admit it, it'd be nice to claim that I have the ability to see the future perfectly and know exactly what's going to happen in every injury and every player. There is an element of luck in fantasy football. It's a there's a significant element of, you know, luck involved. So all you're doing in fantasy is trying to give yourself the highest odds of success.
Yeah, it's all about that probability. And that's what today's Never Not Working is. It's all about breaking down some probability of second-round running backs.
I am looking forward to the conversation. We have NFL news to talk about, getting to some mailbag if we have time. Few reminders right here at the top before we kick it off. The Ultimate Draft Kit is available now at ultimatedraftkit.com, as you know. Apple Podcasts, if you can follow us over there, review the show, we'd appreciate it. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you so much. YouTube.com/TheFantasyFootballers if you want to watch the show. Mike and I...
Oh, we're... Yeah.
We somehow wore the same shirt.
I like to call it burgundy because then we can go burgundy bros. I know.
Oh, I see.
It's not... Look, I'm not a master of color. I did an image search
burgundy. And it's not a color that you would imagine an accidental match on.
No, because it's not a good color.
It's a great color. Thank you, Jason. You are right. It's a deep red.
It's not. It's
muted?
It's a red clay.
It's clay?
I think it's clay. Al?
It's old, old salmon.
What do you have to say about this?
Don't talk about salmon right now.
I feel like it's like a burnt something.
Ooh,
like, not a burnt orange, but... Yeah.
Not a burnt orange?
Burnt salmon.
Yeah, burnt salmon.
Burnt salmon.
Go.
Yeah, we're both matching burnt salmon shirts.
YouTube will let us know. Some color expert will show up.
Are there people that go to school for that? Like a MD in color wheel?
But there are people who know their colors very, very well.
Not us.
No.
Clearly.
Oh, no. Red.
Right.
It's a red shirt.
Let's get this going.
Never Not Working. Presented by Head & Shoulders Scalp Shield Technology. Available at Walmart.
All right. As promised, brand new segment. In the preseason, we're going to be talking through some draft tips, tricks, insights, strategies to help you go the extra mile, outplay your league mates, really outwork your league mates. That's what it takes to win a title, not finish third, not finish fourth, but actually win it. Give yourself that highest probability at success. Mike, you are kind of taking the mantle on today's Never Not Working
Indeed.
Segment.
Yeah, it's been a hot topic of conversation this offseason of rookie running back for the Denver Broncos. Javonte Williams was drafted in the second round. Melvin Gordon, he's still there. He's the wily vet who has been productive throughout his career. He's been a good fantasy football player. He was pretty solid last year as well. And so I wanted to take a look. This is a probability-based game. So let's look back at the recent history, of second-round running backs. So since 2011, we have 29. We now have 30 with Javonte, but I did not include him in the sample because
you don't know how he did.
I don't know how he did. So in that time, we have three rookies that didn't play just because of injury. Before the season, they didn't even get to see the field. So that brings us down to 26 combos of a veteran running back and a second-round pick. Veterans outproduced the rookie in fantasy finish 8 of 26 times. So you're already at a very low probability that Melvin Gordon will outproduce Javonte Williams. Now let's break that down even more. Rookies who received a touch in at least 10 games, that's 19 times. Okay, so we're whittling down the sample. The veteran finished higher 5 of those 19 times.
Wow.
And that was no Sean Moreno. That was a crazy year, if you remember that. Frank Gore, of course. DeMarco Murray beating out Derrick Henry, Reggie Bush, and then Daryl Henderson last year, which barely even counts.
Point of order here. How are you defining veteran? Just the incumbent?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. And what we know is only twice has the pair actually been useful together, where they both finished inside the top 30.
That's very valuable.
So, and guess, funny enough, both times that was Giovanni Bernard and his teammate.
That's funny.
It was Gio and Jeremy Hill, and it was Gio and Joe Mixon.
That kind of feels even like an outlier because Gio fits a mold. He never came in to be a workhorse back, so that kind of makes sense.
But the point was, it's one or the other. It's not going to be both of them. But so the biggest takeaway here to me, and I'm not, this isn't like the death blow to Melvin Gordon. This isn't the 100% in on Javonte Williams. Just looking at historically what has happened. So when a rookie receives a touch in 10 games, 21% of the time, the veteran was a top 20 guy. 42% of the time, so 8 of the 19 rookies ended up as the top 20. And 73% of the time, if a rookie touches the ball in at least 10 games, 73% of the time, the rookie outscores the veteran in fantasy finish.
Now, that's very, very interesting. Good work on that. There are some...
That didn't sound sincere.
No, it's solid work.
Question how I talk here, to my kids.
My question here, though, is...
Good job, champ.
Look, great job. Now, let me poke a hole in it. I'm curious how often a team spends a second-round pick when they have what is considered in the league an elite running back. Not necessarily, in his prime or whatever, but it is a situation where everyone was shocked when Denver drafted Javonte, right? Like prior to the draft, when you were looking at all the best landing spots for running backs,
Miami, Atlanta,
teams that were, the Jets and obviously Pittsburgh. I never once heard Denver brought up because they had a high, at the very least one of the highest paid running backs in the league. So I'm wondering if that makes this situation different. And really what you just enlightened me on says to me, Jason, I'm like, maybe I don't want either of them.
I've dug into second and third round running backs over the last 10 years as well, trying to get a gauge of how they perform compared to ADP, because we've all lived through Ameer Abdullah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cam Akers' rookie season was, he was on a lot of waiver wires. Miles Sanders, you couldn't play him for a long time. David Montgomery, you couldn't play him. And trying to sift through it as well, because, you know, that's interesting to me to hear that number of 73% of the time when they get a touch in at least 10 games, they outperform the veteran. Williams is being drafted ahead of Gordon right now. The 27th running back off the board. Gordon is 30th. Melvin Gordon is being paid $9 million to play football on this team this year. So I think we're all trying to find what you do with it. Now, to me, when I got at the end of my research, I got to the point where more often than not, you're disappointed relative to the hype about these second and third rounders in year one. However, Trey Sermon and Javonte Williams, which are the two, you know,
the second and third,
the
guys,
second and third, because yeah, there's Michael Carter, he's later. There's Travis Etienne, he's earlier. Mm-hmm. But the second and third round guys, both of their draft costs to me are worth the risk.
Agreed.
Which, like, I wanted to get to the end of that and say stay away, but I got to the end of it and said, well, it might not work out, but who cares? Because your draft price for the upside is not that high, and I think the best advice for fantasy players is take that information Mike just gave you, combine it with the reality that you cannot draft Javonte Williams in the fifth round and put him in your lineup week one. If that's how you're approaching the draft, if you're punting running back and you're going, you know, you go quarterback, you go tight end, you go wide receivers, and then you go, man, I'm just going to slot Javonte in as my running back two on week one, you might have a problem, because
sure,
he may get, he'll probably have touches in more than 10 games. He should. But you might not be happy with the touches till week 9, week 10. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. That week 1, plugging Javonte right in is probably a recipe for despair, of you just being frustrated, shouting at the TV, why is Melvin Gordon getting the touches? Put Javonte in. So, and this is end of season fantasy finish. That's what I was looking at. So I right, firmly believe right, by the end, Javonte will be the more valuable running back. And you know, it's a difference here, just to piggyback what you were saying. Javonte, you know, fifth, sixth round, Trey Sermon around there.
Later, yeah.
As well. That could change by the time we're at the end of August and people have seen these players in preseason. I mean, the Ameer Abdullah hype,
and David Montgomery.
I was a
leader. Remember he was Kareem Hunt, Matt Nagy's Kareem Hunt?
Yes.
Year one?
Yeah, I was a founding father of the Ameer Abdullah hype. I loved the prospect. And he was okay in drafts. And then he hit that one cut
mm-hmm.
in preseason. It was
the cut heard around the world.
Exactly. And you saw in the blink of an eye, Ameer Abdullah's ADP jumped two full rounds from that one play. So that definitely could happen.
It was our fault too.
Oh yeah, the fantasy football community. But I'm saying Ameer Abdullah ended up as a fourth round pick. Miles Sanders was in that range as well. So was David Montgomery. They were all up into the fourth. They weren't sixth round guys.
Well, and in recent history, you dealt with like DeAndre Swift. It was a slower road for DeAndre Swift.
I wanted to bring up
even Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah,
is in that category.
If you're talking second round guys who got off to a slow start and then explode at the end of the year, there's perhaps no better example than J.K. Dobbins last year. Comes in with the incumbent. Mark
right.
Ingram was there. Wasn't really utilized. Second half of the year, they're like, let's go. Let's make that change to the juice, the guy mm-hmm. who's actually got, you know, some speed on the field. And he dominates. Week 11 on, he was never outside of the top 20 running backs, including two times as a top six running backs. He helped people win championships. That being said, I think he was a bad draft pick last year, because up through week 10 of the season, he only had two games where he was a top 20 back, and you didn't start him in either of those games. Are you really going to... This is Dobbins. J.K. Dobbins. So are you really going to draft and hold on? Like, if you drafted J.K. Dobbins last year, I don't know that you made the playoffs to get those great runs, because you had a guy on your bench for the first two-thirds of the season that did jack squat for your lineup other than clog your roster. and then you held on to him, or you were someone that picked him up off of waivers when he wasn't doing much.
What's funny is in recent history, ironically, the biggest disappointments in this category are Denver Bronco running backs. Genuinely. The draft capital spent on Royce Freeman was extremely high, and the draft capital spent on Monty Ball was extremely high, and both players ended up well below their ADP. I my takeaway is probably not a good idea to say, hey, I'm just going to grab Melvin Gordon. Maybe I get a special year from him, because it sounds like probability-wise I won't. Like, even if Williams isn't a difference maker, the kind of cannibalization in the backfield says Melvin Gordon doesn't have the potential to be a league winner. So investing that pick might be more of a risk than we think. And I don't know what that would say about Raheem Mostert, because you're going later.
I'm starting to get very worried about Mostert.
I don't know how to feel. I don't. One week I'm all about Mostert. You see practice reports. He's by far the best running back. He's exploding on every play.
The thing about Mostert that I think is very different than Melvin Gordon here is Melvin Gordon has always been a volume back, someone that gets his fantasy points by touching the ball 20, 25 times a game, whereas Mostert, his fantasy production comes on like 10 touches. He doesn't need much. He just takes one, you know, with his speed to the house. So I think he'll be okay for a team that looks like they'll run the ball a little bit more than the Broncos. But this is great research, and I think for draft season, I'm probably out on both running backs. And then I'll look to trade for Javonte or pick him up off of waivers.
All right, that was never not working. Good discussion, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when Jason started off, he's just kind of like, yeah, thanks, Mike.
I got my hair tussled.
Yeah,
I got a piece of bubble gum and sent on my way.
Look at you. Get up to 100% dandruff protection that's never not working, just like that segment, with Head & Shoulders Scalp Shield technology available at Walmart.com.
News and notes from around the league, presented by Sleeper.
One piece of news from our company is we got this out on Twitter yesterday. Had to make the very, very, very difficult decision to cancel our late August live show here in Phoenix. Sent refunds out to ticket holders. We were very excited about that event. Ultimately, it came down to, you know, the health and safety of our fans and our local community and the unpredictability of the surge and what's happening with COVID right now. So there was no way to predict with certainty that we could have that event in a safe manner based on all of the things that we had planned. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we built that show out before the recent history. So very disappointed to have to announce that. But at the same time, we know that brighter days are ahead, and we're very excited about those days.
The global tour in 2022 is going to rock. So stay tuned.
I almost want to do it. I don't think my wife would like that, but it's like
one show per continent?
No,
I don't think we need to
state.
Hit each continent.
Well, he said global.
Yeah, oh, I'm going international.
You know how many bonjours that is?
A lot.
All right, Allen Robinson, camstring. held out of practice after being listed as a late scratch. We'll monitor that. Will Fuller still hasn't practiced since July 29th due to a foot injury.
This one's not looking good.
That's why he built in that suspension. He wanted an extra week off. So we'll see what happens there. What do we do with this news? This is more significant. The Cowboys, you shared this tweet with me, and when I saw the tweet, Brooks, can you find the actual tweet? I want you to read it. The Cowboys are tweeting about Dak Prescott. When I saw the contents of the tweet in our Slack channel, I never would have thought it came from the actual Dallas account.
Yeah, exactly. The wording, the phrasing, and then the formatting of the tweet was essentially...
Can you read that, Brooks? Do you have that for us?
It's not a setback, and it's not a reason to worry, but Dak Prescott is planning on getting another MRI.
a setup.
That's literally like, Jason, whatever you do, I want you to know that there's no chance you have a spider on you right now, but don't look down.
Yeah.
Don't look down. I promise you're fine. Whatever you do, don't look down.
I will say this. I don't view this as something serious. I view this as something foolish. I think that they were trying to get ahead of, like, they're going to get another MRI. That's going to come out that he got another MRI. They're trying to get ahead of it. And they're trying to say, guys, don't worry. This is not something to be worried about. But the fact that they tweeted it out like this is the most absurd, like, throw gasoline on embers. Like, there wasn't a problem here right now. We all know he's got an issue and he's recovering. And they're like, there was just no need for
the fire department shows up with like 10 hoses to put out this non-fire.
It's like a telegrams. It's not a setback. Stop. And it's not a reason to worry. Stop. But Dak Prescott's having an MRI. Full stop.
Our injury expert, Matthew Betts, who is co-host of the DFS podcast and does a lot of, you know, all the injury work in our ultimate draft kit, he says not to freak out yet. They're evaluating how much muscle has healed. We had a big discussion with him yesterday. He was examining what prognosis looks like for this injury when it's happened in baseball players. If it's a grade 2 moderate strain, it's a long timeline.
Then it will be, it's a reason to worry.
Yeah, and we don't know. I mean, I don't know what the difference is between a, you know, a quarterback's throwing motion and a pitcher in terms of being able to get back and get to full strength, but let's wait for the MRI / Hard Knocks to tell us what's going on. Another couple of updates, rookie wide receiver monitoring, Rashad Bateman, he's going to have groin surgery.
Yeah.
So
my groin.
Weeks, not months, but surgery, not surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, sometime in September return, then you've got to get acclimated. It's not great. And then Elijah Moore left practice today with a member of the training staff.
As a rookie wide receiver for the New York Jets.
So a lot of camp hype for him. I'm excited for him. But again, we kind of said next year, and we don't know what this injury is. So
now, do we make anything of the report came out yesterday. Denzel Mims, the other New York Jets wide receiver, he was a second-round pick just last year. And he had been buried on the depth chart. He was playing with the twos, and then it was
the threes.
Now he's playing with the threes, and it was, what is going on? How are they giving up on this guy so fast? Then we heard a report. He had a bout of horrific food poisoning that eventually caused him to lose 20 pounds because he was sick for 2 weeks.
It was burnt salmon.
It was salmon. He should have burned it to burn off whatever nastiness was on there. But is it possible that him missing all of that time of the off season, is that the reason he's playing with the threes?
It could be, but I feel like the more time we spend talking about any of these Jets, it's like these guys are competing to not be relevant for fantasy.
That is correct.
But yeah, I mean, let's hope he's feeling better and can be given an opportunity with this coaching staff. Xavier Jones, Rams running back. Sean McVay came out and said the team is, quote, expecting to count on him through the season.
It's good news.
He was probably
picked up in all your dynasty leagues when Cam Akers went down. Mm-hmm. But if somehow he slipped through the cracks, he's worth checking on because Xavier Jones will have to be involved. Daryl Henderson cannot carry the load. And, you know, the camp reports have been very good. I would expect around the goal line as well that Xavier Jones has opportunity to punch in some touchdowns on a good offense. So he should be rostered in all dynasty formats.
And then I wonder what amount of time we should spend here on these two pieces of news.
It's weird.
But David Johnson is currently listed, you know, behind Mark Ingram and Philip Lindsay on the Texans depth chart. It's being reported that, you know, like literally Sarah Barshop from ESPN puts it in these terms. David Johnson, last year's starter, is expected to fill a different role similar to Duke Johnson with Lindsay as the starter. They've talked about how much they love Mark Ingram's leadership. He was listed as co-starter with Lindsay. So it's kind of a mess in the Houston backfield, which we knew, but we hoped that maybe David Johnson was the diamond in the rough. But Duke Johnson had no fantasy relevance when he was in that role.
Correct.
No, I mean, this is a team that is expecting to score very few NFL.
They're expecting it?
Yeah, of course they are. because they're still humans with eyeballs. This is going to be the worst team in the league, assuming that Deshaun Watson's not playing. And so I have viewed David Johnson as kind of a very late round value in best ball drafts and larger formats. I've been grabbing him in the later rounds. This definitely gives me pause there because the hope is that, well, he's going to get the vast majority of work for a poor offense. If you're splitting work for a poor offense, no thank you.
Travis Etienne is currently listed third on the depth chart behind Carlos Hyde and James Robinson. Do you care?
No. I mean, they have not named the starting quarterback yet because rookies get it in here. We.
Yeah.
You guys have seen all the talk, though, with Gardner saying he was going to do it. You know, basically anything he could.
Yes, he, in fact, was not making any number twos in the bathroom because number two is
strategic,
unacceptable.
That helps you?
Well,
constipation?
I don't think so, but
that's unhealthy,
let's
Gardner.
Let's find out.
Gardner, you need fiber. You don't need to be holding it
in.
You
got to pass through.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Is that the equivalent of adding some weight so he can break some tackles?
You would add weight. That is, in the wrong places.
Yeah,
right.
That's some dead weight.
That was today's news and notes presented by Sleeper. Sleeper's the largest Dynasty platform out there. Customizable. We love Dynasty, and you will love it on Sleeper.
Sleeper's great. Easy to use.
Before we move on to the running backs part two, I want to thank today's sponsor, Manscaped. Fellas, you know we've been talking about Manscaped for quite some time on this show. The best men's grooming products out there. The best body hair trimmer. The Lawnmower 4.0. They keep taking this thing up to the next level. And speaking of global, I mean, Manscaped is now taking a global. They're in the U.S., Canada, U.K., Europe, Australia, South Africa, Singapore. They are everywhere, and they take care of you, all of your grooming needs, not just trying to get rid of some of that nasty body hair. You got the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. They have deodorants. They have toners. They even have performance boxer briefs, and you can get all this and a travel bag in the Performance Package 4.0. I love my Manscaped gear. I use it very frequently. I take care of my grooming needs with them. And right now, you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FOOTBALLERS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FOOTBALLERS at manscaped.com. Trust me, this is the only body grooming trimmer that you need.
And we want to thank SeatGeek. Look, football season's right around the corner. Go to games. Go to live events. I am taking my boys to their first game. I'm going to the Rams game in October. And where do you think I got my seats? SeatGeek. Because
I'm going to the Christmas Day. I got them on SeatGeek as well.
Yeah,
SeatGeek Cardinals-Colts
is such a wonderful and easy way to get it. You know, sometimes you feel like these ticketing websites are making it difficult on purpose. The SeatGeek app is soups easy. It's convenient. They take in different sources. So, like, even if you look around, the tickets are always going to be available on SeatGeek. And then they rank it a 1 to 10, a green scale, to just really show you whether or not this is a good deal. It makes it so easy.
The service is very easy to use. Yes.
The maps are fantastic. The interactive seat maps, if you want to get a good idea of what you're seeing. I can't even imagine using a different app. Every ticket on SeatGeek is also backed by their buyer guarantee. So you could shop for tickets with confidence. And don't worry, we got a hookup. Use the code FOOTBALLERS for $20 off tickets at SeatGeek. That's $20 off your first purchase with promo code FOOTBALLERS. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app today and use code FOOTBALLERS for $20 off your first SeatGeek order. SeatGeek.com.
Running backs.
Running backs part two. Talked through the top 10 names yesterday. McCaffrey, Cook, Kamara, Henry, Elliott, Jones, Barkley, Chubb, Eckler, and Jonathan Taylor. This episode is very important, so pay attention. Last year, on this very episode, Nick Chubb, Jonathan Taylor, talked about those guys. I brought up David Montgomery as my favorite mid-round running back. He ended up having quite the second half
quite
of
the
season.
Year, yeah.
And after those top-tier running backs, finding that perfect RB2 could be league-winning if you find the guy with a ceiling, which is why I like this next running back, number 11 on the list, because the ceiling, to me, is very high. Joe Mixon, running back for the Cincinnati Bengals. Jason and I both have him inside our top 10 at number 10 overall, Mike at 14. He's going as the RB11 right now. Last year was a year that was mostly lost due to injury. But this is a workhorse back with pass catching chops. That is the cliff notes on Joe Mixon and why I like him. Last year in only six games, 24 opportunities a game with Gio Bernard on the roster. This is his team. He's 25 years old. I just really like the potential for ceiling with him, and I think the floor is pretty decent too. I'm not going to bake in, oh, what if he gets hurt again and misses the rest of the year? I mean, right. Any running back, that can happen to them.
Look, if Joe Mixon sucks this year, he's going to be really good for fantasy. I mean, that's the honest truth. He's going to get such a percentage of work that if he is bad, objectively inefficient, he's going to be good for fantasy football. You had Giovanni Bernard last year with 124 carries and 47 targets. No, I'm sorry, 47 receptions. Mm. Joe Mixon is a good back. The way that you're disappointed is injury. You're exactly right, Andy. I mean, that's pretty much how you've been disappointed by Joe Mixon in the past.
He really – I know that it gets thrown around a lot. And Joe Mixon, he only played the six games. And this last year was particularly brutal because the way that the team was releasing news about Joe Mixon. It was, oh, he has this minor foot injury.
He'll be back.
Well, he's not back this week, but, you know, next week probably. Maybe in the next 2 to 3 weeks, shut down. So that was brutal because you kept him on your bench, and he kept clogging a roster spot for you. So that was particularly bad. I get that, and we all felt that. But in 2019, played all 16 games. The first 2 years in the league, he played 14 of 16 games.
Yeah, he finishes the RB9 in 14 games. He finishes 13 in 2019, and last year he was pacing for 60 catches and 1,200 yards.
14 games as a running back is a full season. And
right.
Here's what I mean by that. You're saying, well, no, that's 16 is a full season. Last year of the top 20 fantasy running backs, so the guys that actually hit, the best running backs for fantasy football, there were only two of them that played more than 14 games. Everyone misses two games at the running back position. So, he's a guy that I'm confident in. I have had less hope, less excitement in the Bengals offense as of late. You know, obviously the poor reports coming out about Joe Burrow. He's not looking great. Obviously, the timeline of his injury is still we're early in the recovery. His, like, earliest full recovery was supposed to be about week one. But again, if he stinks, if he's not good, then he is a solid RB2. Like, a really good RB2. And you'll be disappointed he's not an RB1. But if he's decent, if Joe Burrow levels up as the season goes on, you know, if the offensive line is a little bit improved, which it should be, getting Jonah Williams back, I mean, Joe Mixon's ceiling is a top five back. There are, you could count them on one hand, the guys that are going to get all the work. And Joe Mixon's one of them.
No question. No question at all. He was, even last year, 90% of the rushing share in that offense. And unless Samaje Perine is concerning you, I think Joe Mixon is going to have every chance to kind of have, you know, if you had passed on Dalvin Cook after a couple of banged up seasons, you are regretting your decisions.
Last year, just the final highlight, 24 opportunities a game.
Yeah.
In those six games. Like, that is an outrageous amount of work.
Yeah, that's 24 more opportunities than, like, a guy like Kerryon Johnson was getting.
Oh,
taking
pot shots.
I don't know why. Maybe because the opportunities are just fading away. Antonio Gibson comes in at number 12. Jason has him at 11, his champion. And Mike has him at 12.
Thank you, Andy.
I've got him at 15.
I don't like what's the trends that are happening.
Are you talking about old Gibson Eckler over here, Mike?
Yeah.
Gibby Eckler. I have him the lowest. He's going at RB12 right now. Average draft position of 207. He's the only rookie running back ever with double-digit rushing touchdowns and 35-plus receptions in fewer than 15 games played. He's one of the players that stood out in that examination over the last 10 years. Rookie running backs drafted in the second and third round that outperformed their ADP. He was a goldmine for fantasy players last year. He also had, 11 touchdowns? Is that right? On 180 carries? Or fewer than 180. Yeah.
He had 170 carries, almost 800 rushing yards, 11 rushing touchdowns.
There is tons to love about Antonio Gibson. I still believe that the team will be annoying. Nyheim Hines' best friend, J.D. McKissic, one of those touch gobblers, will will end up making you frustrated with the total targets and total receptions. But Gibson has every opportunity for ceiling. And it's the same argument here as you have with Joe Mixon. Better quarterback, good defense, level up season, more experience. One of the things that doesn't get discussed about all of those rookies that you have high hopes for in the second and third round is that we see the one-cut plays by Ameer Abdullah, but you don't see missed pass protections. You don't see acclimation to the playbook or you know, when you go to take the carry and the guy runs the wrong direction. Like, those things impact real depth charts. Gibson's coming into year two. Injury's not an issue. So while I have him at 15, I do see the pathway for him being a top 10 back.
He is a sub 4'4", 220-pound running back. When those guys hit, they have the opportunity to explode for fantasy football. He's a converted wide receiver from college, so the passing game is capable. Let's say that he's just average in the passing game, not anything special. The expectation, the betting odds, would be that this player, player X, don't say it's Antonio Gibson, would be more involved in that aspect of the NFL game in his second year than he was in his first year.
Yeah.
That's just a natural progression. That's not forcing Antonio Gibson to be the three-down back. That's just, oh, he's coming into his second year, he's better at pass protection, which has been talked about in camp already. And the reality was, he is involved enough in the passing game. His pace in the rookie year was 53 targets for 44 receptions. I mean, Dalvin Cook last year had 54 targets for 44 receptions.
Good thing you've corrected, because I was about to drop the button.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just have to look directly at the situation, you know, versus, you know, Josh Jacobs. The probability didn't pay out because you know what the coaching staff did. You know, Jonathan Taylor might not pay out because you know what the coaching staff did. But what you're saying, 44 receptions is plenty when you go up from 170 carries.
Yeah.
When you go to 220, 230, which is where I think he'll be.
And I'm not expecting him to be used. Like, we talked about Joe Mixon, he's going to get all the work. I don't expect that for Antonio Gibson. But I do expect Antonio Gibson, if he gets 220 carries and gets up around, you know, 45, 50 receptions, he's going to be great for fantasy, because the athleticism he has with just that amount of work will be great. This offense is going to be improved with Ryan Fitzpatrick there. And I am very bullish, because I do think his floor is around the running back 15. Like, I don't think he's a bad RB2, but his ceiling, because of his athleticism, is, you know, very, very high. So I'm in love with a couple of the guys on today's show, but Gibson is one of the two I'm highest on.
It's wild that the path that the team took with Antonio Gibson. Last year they talked about the reason he's not in on third down and playing those, they didn't want to overwhelm him with the playbook. And they're now talking about how Antonio Gibson can be the key to unlocking the full playbook this year for Washington. He was mostly a wide receiver in college, and so taking him and turning him into more of a two down running back was very curious, but he succeeded. He was one of the most elusive running backs. He breaking tackles. He had one of the best stuff rates at the offensive line, as in he's always getting you yards where he's able to break a tackle or make somebody miss. The Washington offensive line has taken a step back. They've lost some key pieces, but they're still good enough. And just with the Turner offense, I'm with Jason that Antonio Gibson feels like a very safe pick at his ADP, and he still has headroom to outperform that by a wide margin.
13, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We have a pretty big disparity here, actually. Jason at 12, Mike at 10. I'm at 20 with Clyde. 181 carries for 803 and 4 last year, 54 targets, 36 catches, 297 through the air. He finished at RB21. He had 18 opportunities a game for the team last year. That is up from what Gibson had, right? Gibson was around 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 18 is solid.
18's a lot. You know, you can talk about Clyde, I think, and be fair-minded without insulting him. And so I think my ranking is more in line with my thought that this team is going to share the load, and that during a rookie season in which he had 18 carries a game.
Opportunities.
I feel like I got a large enough sample size to see some problems. I think if you're on an elite offense, we probably should have seen a little bit more explosiveness from him to get those kind of games for fantasy at least once or twice. Like, we talk about quarterbacks not flashing as rookies. I saw Clyde as tried and true. I didn't see him as explosive and league winning. And then I just think that they're going to use Darryl, and I think they're going to use McKinnon quite a bit, which is going to take away some of that passing game upside for Clyde. So only 4 touchdowns last year. He was the inverse of Antonio Gibson, but I think part of that is game plan and the way that they throw the ball around in the red zone, hand the ball off to other players.
I'm in love with Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, baby.
And this is coming from the guy who did not absolutely adore his college tape. I thought he was, you know, good pass catcher, solid all-around guy, but he didn't have the explosive speed that I like, that, you know, the breakaway to become a superstar for fantasy. And we saw that a lot. I think that's what Andy's bringing up, is the fact that, like, we saw enough to know, like, there were some limitations to his game, and I agree with that. However, here's why I am madly in love with Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year. There's a couple of reasons. One, I mean, rookies take a leap in their second year. They just get, like I said, this is why I like Gibson. This is why I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's coming into his second year. Also, there's a lot of studies done about the age of a rookie mattering for how they break out. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire is young. I mean, he played his entire rookie year at 21 years old. He is 22 this next year versus, like, Najee Harris, who we'll talk about in a minute.
What's he going to be next year?
Not as old as Najee the rookie is, is what he'll be next year. So the fact that he is on Kansas City's offense with that first-round draft capital going into year two at only 22 years old, there is no way that I think he gets worse for fantasy. Like, I cannot see a path where they didn't invest at running back this offseason. They brought, you know, they re-signed a backup, and they got someone cut from teams. Like, this is not – there's no real true competition for touches here. And just the natural progression of becoming a veteran, I think he's going to – have the highest floor of the players you draft here. He often falls to the middle of the third round, but you can get him almost always at that 2-3 turn. And if you're someone that drafted Christian McCaffrey, and then you can have the safety of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, pair him with him, and I believe have that top 10 upside because, oh yeah, you're in the best offense in the NFL. I just don't see – I feel like last year was such a disappointment on the hype that we are – misguided in how low we're dropping CEH in our rankings.
I don't think you mean we.
I mean the
you mean me.
Average. No. I'm talking about the ADP.
The ADP is 14. You're at 12.
Right. So I'm just saying he is often in the third round of fantasy drafts. That's what I'm saying. It's like I would happily draft him in the second round, and I will ecstatically draft him in the third.
I don't love seeing players get hurt multiple times at the end of the year going into the playoff run as reasons why the workload's going to increase. Do you think it's going to increase, or do you think he's just going to be better?
I think the workload will increase in the passing game because that's just the natural progression for a second-year guy who's better at those attributes of pass blocking and knowing the system.
Yeah, I think the workload does increase. You saw 54 targets in 13 games. That's really – that's solid. That is a solid target share for a rookie running back. I just highlighted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the Ice and Fire show and how unlucky he was when it came to getting a touchdown. He got a touchdown every 43 touches instead of every 25 touches like the other running backs around him in volume. The opportunities are there. And interesting, you know, this is just now coming to me of like Jonathan Taylor, Antonio Gibson, you know, the rookie running backs that really – took off for fantasy. For both of them, it was the second half of the year that they started to shine. I mean, you had the weird training camp with all the COVID protocols. These guys really didn't have a full off season. And Clyde, like, when he started to miss games, it was the second half. I mean, he missed week 13 with an illness, and then he missed the final 2 weeks because of the leg injury. So it's very possible that Clyde could have taken off there just like the other rookie running backs. And I think that him in the third round, if you go running back, running back, running back, and Clyde is that third guy, that's a sensational start to a draft.
All right, Mike and Jason, all in on Clyde. I have my concerns that they have a goal line and a pass-catching back on the team, and so Clyde may dominate between the 20s. Najee is at 19 for me, 15 for Jason, 9 for Mike. Najee will have the workload in Pittsburgh, so I think he's going to be a very consistent running back. He's a first-rounder. They're trying to, for the fifth consecutive year, establish the run in this offense and take some of the pressure off of Big Ben. The offensive line is not good. I'm curious what your expectations are from an explosive standpoint for Najee. Do you think there'll be explosive plays, or do you think it's going to be the kind of fantasy production we saw from James Conner, which was you weren't necessarily impressed with the, you know, per touch, but it was just so many touches?
Yeah, it's I think a bit of both. I mean, Najee is an explosive athlete, and he's a great pass catcher. So you could see, you'll see some of those highlights throughout the year of, like back with, you know, when Kareem Hunt makes a true highlight play in the passing game. Najee has that ability, except he's a much larger man than Kareem Hunt. And the Steelers running backs, last year, the offensive line was trash. I mean, that's an argument for this year. Like, oh, the line's bad. Well, it was bad last year. Big Ben is going to be bad this year. Well, people thought that Big Ben was bad last year, and the Pittsburgh Steelers running back was very solid for fantasy football. James Conner, before getting hurt, was putting up good weeks. Now, you didn't always know, like week one, I should say, when it ended up being Benny Snell as the primary guy because Conner got taken out of the game. But between James Conner and Benny Snell, the Pittsburgh running back only finished outside of the top 24 four times. That is a very high level of consistency, and Najee is the guy. Back when Le'Veon Bell was the guy for the Pittsburgh Steelers, 24 opportunities a game. That's what I expect for Najee Harris. That's what the team is. Those cards have already been shown in the Hall of Fame game. And the starters played into the second quarter. Najee Harris was getting every single snap at the running back position. First round draft capital. It just makes sense. So with everything Jason was saying about Joe Mixon, of even if Joe Mixon has some inefficiencies, the volume will overcome. And that's why I think that Najee Harris will easily finish as at least a top 15 running back, and I'm projecting him to finish as a running back one.
It is an interesting argument to talk about him versus Joe Mixon, because talent-wise, you know, I love Joe Mixon coming in, and Najee, I love Najee. I'm much more hesitant on Najee because of the offensive line and because of some of those struggles. We obviously have not seen it in the NFL, but man alive, did I love the college tape. But when I look at the difference in the offenses, do you like the Steelers or do you like the Bengals offense more for just total points scored this season?
I think I like the Pittsburgh defense a lot.
Yeah, but which offense do you think scores more points?
I guess Pittsburgh, but so, I don't think either of them are going to be prolific.
Yeah, I mean, they're fair comps.
I think you're saying that there are a lot of parallels between Najee and Mixon.
Yeah,
I have no worry about Benny Snell. I have no worry about Anthony McFarlane. I have no worry about Jalen Samuels. So he's going to be out there for every play, and that's foundational. That's safe. And when you look at ADP and outperforming ADP, you know, I talked about second and third round running backs. First rounders are almost 100% guaranteed to produce. I mean, over the last 10 years, they almost all outperform their ADP. So really strong argument there. And then if you want to transition that to mentally thinking about ETN producing, where, you know, Jason likes ETN a lot. 15 and 16, we got to move on. Montgomery and Chris Carson. I'm very high on David Montgomery. He's going to get all of the work in this offense. He showed me elite production over the back half of the year. 96% of running backs over the last 25 years with 250 touches and 8 touchdowns, finishing the top 15. He's being drafted at 18. Nobody wants to take him. I don't know why. There's like a stench from rookie season that has permeated, not as exciting for some reason. The Bears offense has a stench to it, so you compound those.
Sure.
I think David Montgomery has no chance to bust. I really don't think it's possible for David Montgomery to bust in this offense.
It would be very difficult for him to bust considering how late he's going. He could disappoint and just return on the value. Like, he's the running back 18. You drafted him to be the running back 18. Oh, darn, you missed out on running back X who exploded. Like, that's why people aren't taking him, is because they think there might be someone, you know, a sexier pick. But I would agree with you, Andy. Like, the volume that will be there on an offense that is middle of the pack and is probably better this year with their quarterback situation than they were last year when David Montgomery
had. For sure are.
He also showed you that he can explode.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
when you have 8 touchdowns in that's 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 6 games that he exploded.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you can make the argument of Tariq Cohen going down. So he became kind of the only guy in town. Maybe the passing volume was higher last year than you'll have this year. But he also showed the team, you can really count on me. We can have some better offense by getting me the ball this way and that way. So I think his upside isn't quite as high. Like, if you're comparing him against Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think both of them have a pretty darn safe floor. I do think the upside is questionable. I mean, obviously he showed last year he can finish high, but you wouldn't expect that to be something that happens for a mediocre offense over and over and over and over. And that, I think, is the stench, as well as just the fact that you don't look at the Bears as some prolific offense.
I think that the 68 targets comes down for David Montgomery. I've come around a little bit. You know, I've moved Montgomery up in my projections, and I'm above ADP now, which I had been right around the ADP range most of the offseason. Yes, Tariq Cohen still injured, but Damian Williams is a good player. He is a good running back, and he is back. And I think that
was
what he was. Yeah, he was a good running back. Maybe it's gone, but Damian Williams does not have a lot of usage in the NFL, and won't surprise me to see. You know, like Tariq Cohen, when he was in his heyday, I mean, he was seeing 6+ targets a game. Not projecting Damian will do that, but projecting that maybe David Montgomery isn't seeing 5 targets a game. Maybe that's down at 3 or so on an average by the end of the season.
I hope not. I mean, that'd be stupid of them. He was so good with those targets last year. If you remember the last game of the season, he was 9 for 9. He had multiple games where he was getting a lot of targets. I hope they use him that way, because Tariq Cohen is 100% DUN. I mean, he is.
Yes.
He's finished.
I agree.
But yeah, the Bears' offense questionable. Carson is a player that I'm starting to waver on. Chris Carson, I'm starting to, because I don't see a ceiling. Like, we know what Chris Carson is, and we know what this offense is going to do, but I don't think he has a ceiling. So when you are making a decision between Montgomery, Clyde, Carson, Swift, like, why? I think the question is, why Carson? Like, why would you take Carson over those players? So I don't think he's going to end up on any of my teams.
And the reality is, Rashad Penny has been completely left for dead. Like, genuinely undrafted, an afterthought. And so far, it seems like he's back alive in camp. And so this could be a situation where I'm not saying Rashad Penny is someone you should draft or is valuable, but he could be a real problem for Chris Carson, the way that, you know, when you look at who's around Joe Mixon and Najee Harris and even David Montgomery and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and you're like, those players aren't worrisome to the workload. Whereas here you could say, oh, he could lose 4 or 5 touches a game pretty easily from what he did last year.
Opportunities went down by 6 a game last year from the year before. None of this is saying Chris Carson's a great player.
Yes.
I just think he has a certain level of, like, nobody would say this is Chris Carson's team. Nobody would say that everything's running through Chris Carson. I think you can make that contention about, you know, a number of these other running backs. So I'm the highest of the three of us. I'm just wavering a little bit on, would I pull the trigger? Like, I think the end of the year stats will be there, but for my fantasy lineup, I'll pull the trigger on somebody that might give me a little bit more upside.
I'm in on Carson, and the reason would be that, I mean, the ceiling, it comes down to the Seahawks offense and that he has an elite quarterback. Meanwhile, DeAndre Swift, the offense is going to be poor. Maybe DeAndre Swift is the guy, and he's just out there with all the volume. But even if Penny takes away from Chris Carson, and we're still, you know, 16 opportunities a game in an elite offense with high touchdown upside, that works out. That can work out for fantasy. The team, while it's not his team, you were right. I don't think of Chris Carson being, you know, the face of the team, but they did pay him to come back. They just invested in him, you know, a new 2-year contract, not breaking the bank by any means, but it's at least enough of a commitment saying you will be the starting running back. So to 16 opportunities a game, which he saw last year, that feels like the floor for what Carson, and we saw him with 22 opportunities.
He's got a great floor.
Ago.
He has a great floor.
I mean, I think he's a safe pick.
My problem is where he's going. There's other running backs I prefer, and there's Allen Robinson, and there's CeeDee Lamb. There's just other ways that you could go in your draft.
What about DeAndre Swift? Swift is 17 in our consensus, drafted as the 16 right now. Some people are just crazy excited about DeAndre Swift.
He's so tough because the team is terrible. Jamal Williams was they sought after Jamal Williams, and Jamal Williams, the running back, he's a great player. The team's going to be bad. The thing for DeAndre Swift that people, I believe, are excited for is people had him ranked as their number one running back coming out last year. So they're just projecting, you know, the second year of their favorite running back.
He finished at RB18 with 114 carries.
It's a really easy argument to
114 carries. You want to talk about Gibson outproducing in rushing touchdowns? 114 carries and 8 rushing touchdowns?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
DeAndre Swift is a great running back.
That's a feature.
Yeah, he's a great running back. He's going into year two. This is the range of those year two running backs you want to pick the breakout, and he's an excellent pass catcher on a team that requires pass catchers because they have no wide receivers worthy of being starting wide receivers here. So the outlook is he's going to catch the ball, and he's electric. The downside is it's the Detroit Lions, and the touchdowns probably won't be there. So I find myself usually going the other direction, despite the fact that I love the talent and I have him at running back 14.
He's also missed some time in camp. Jamal Williams is there, as we said. So there is a little bit, you know, Jamal Williams is a great pass blocker.
DeAndre Swift averaged a touchdown every 38 snaps.
I know. And it's funny
because
this is it's the thing about fantasy is it's like, you know, Alvin Kamara broke a lot of metrics for 4 years where reversion or not being able to do it. And same with Gibson, right? It's like, you go probability or do you go like you found a unique talent? Like both of those things exist. Like some people are more efficient at scoring, and we'll find out if it's DeAndre Swift this year.
Right.
Josh Jacobs at 18. He wouldn't have been on today's show, I think, if it wasn't for me having him up higher. Jason at 20, Mike 19. I have him at 13. He was the RB8 last year, somehow the most hated RB8 of all time. He's crazy consistent. He was. I mean, weeks 1 through 8, he was 14 fantasy points a game. Weeks 9 through 17, 14 fantasy points a game. That's what I think you get with him, but you get it at RB19, draft cost. You get a super consistent RB2 that is still very young, that still does have...
But Andy, they went and signed Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, I just don't care that much.
They didn't just sign Kenyon Drake. They gave him a very large contract to be a backup running back.
I don't mind Josh Jacobs where he's going in drafts. He's going as basically the running back 20, and while I don't think he has some top 5 upside because he's not going to be involved in the passing game, he only had 33 receptions last year. So if Kenyon Drake comes in and takes over the Jalen Richard, DeAndre Washington role that has always been there, I do think Josh Jacobs is a quality back who's going to get a lot of work, and nobody wants him because of Kenyon Drake. And That's probably a mistake. I don't have him as high. I don't have him up at 13. But I do think that he is a valuable fantasy asset for where he's going. If he continues to fall, like in a super flex, I got him like the price. Exactly. I got him in the seventh round the other day. And if you're telling me I can get a starting running back in the seventh, okay.
And I think he's almost, because of what Gruden and that team does, I think he's almost one of the most guaranteed double-digit touchdown running backs in football.
We do have to bring up the offensive line has taken a perceived major step back. Three of their starters are gone.
J.K. Dobbins at 19, Daryl Henderson at 20. Dobbins is he's a difficult player to project because I think we all agree the talent is there. I think we all agree that the targets probably won't be.
Yep.
And I think, you know, we all have Gus Edwards as a potential late round value because of his involvement in this team. I don't think the team looks at this through any lens other than we've got two really productive quality backs that we're going to use, but you also have a running back at quarterback. So are we missing something here with Dobbins? Is there we're lower than ADP. Like the community is drafting him at 15. I think there's more excitement out there from them than us. So
he's probably,
are we whiffing here because there's more upside than we perceive?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the player that scares me the most because we have been universally down on him. He's not a pass catcher. I mean, he can do it, but in this offense, they just don't utilize it that way, or at least have not. And if he's not catching the ball and if he doesn't score touchdowns at the crazy rate that he did his rookie year, he's probably not going to be a fantasy superstar. So we've been down on him for that reason. But all three of us love the talent. I know Mike and I were very high on Dobbins coming out.
I had him ranked above Swift
last year. And
another touchdown outlier guy, too.
Yeah, he performed in his rookie year when given the opportunity. So I feel like this is one where we could eat crow, but I generally am passing on him in most drafts because I want the pass-catching guy.
You also would have to take him ahead of where you kind of have him ranked compared to those other guys. And so, you know, it's tough to take that plunge at the top of the third.
Yeah, at the top of the third, I would much rather draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire there. And if, Andy, you were just saying of do you go in on the probability or do you go in on this is a special talent? Yes, J.K. Dobbins was incredibly efficient. 9% of his carries were over 15 yards. That's the highest in the NFL. Like when he got the ball, he went. But we've now seen back-to-back years of over-efficiency when it comes to the running back for Baltimore and scoring touchdowns.
And Gus, I believe, is in the same metric that you just quoted.
Yes.
I think like Gus and Dobbins are both chunk play artists when you are trying to cover Lamar.
But I'm saying 2 years ago, you saw Mark Ingram score an unbelievable amount of touchdowns given the opportunity he received.
Last year, that could happen.
You saw the same thing happen for J.K. Dobbins, and Dobbins is a much better player than Mark Ingram was 2 years ago. So,
right,
I'm perfectly fine with the running back 15 in ADP, and I'm betting on Dobbins.
Daryl Henderson, I've warmed on quite a bit. He's moved up my rankings. I'm at 16, Jason 19, Mike 24. He's going to have the role. I mean, he's going to have every opportunity. Every team has somebody that needs to, you know, Xavier Jones is going to spell him. But I started, the more I looked at it, the more I looked at how many carries this team is going to have. It's him.
He's very important to this offense. They need Daryl Henderson to be good on this really high-powered offense. I'm happy to take Daryl Henderson where he's being drafted because you know he can catch the ball. You know it's a great offense. You know he's the guy, the competition for touches. He will, you know, win the majority of the touches, both, I think, pretty much everywhere. Matthew Stafford throws the ball to the running back, and Daryl Henderson has the chops to take it. It's just a matter of, I know that they are trying to limit his workload because they worry about his injury history and whether he can handle that. Ironically, yesterday he left practice hurting his hand, but he did come back to practice. But it's one of those things where it's like, all the word out of LA is that they're keeping a close eye on him because they're worried about whether he could take it. So when you leave practice for hand injury, it's like,
last year, because Cam Akers ended up being, you know, banged up to start the season, and Daryl Henderson was, he had higher snap share. But in those first 6 weeks, he was a top 24 running back four times. And the first week, he didn't even really play. He was a top 12 running back three times. And in all of those games, in all of those fantasy finishes, he was doing that with about 50% of the snaps.
Yeah, and you still had Malcolm Brown there, who was stealing goal line carries away from
right.
him. So if for some reason he gets goal line work, even if he simply gets the majority of it, there's some hidden upside there for a player we didn't think we'd be talking about on this show just a few weeks ago when Cam Akers looked like the future. So Miles Sanders at 21, Gaskin 22, Chase Edmonds 23. Full rankings with tiers up on the website. You can go to ultimatedraftkit.com if you want to check those out as well. Who are you most afraid of busting from this entire group?
I would go Chris Carson.
I would go Swift.
Swift is mine as well. What about who's going to end up on most of your teams?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, Clyde and Gibson. They will, certainly, but probably Najee.
Okay.
Because I have him ranked so much higher
what about
than
you,
the
Andy?
ADP.
Probably Monty.
Monty.
Maybe Josh Jacobs, though, with the draft cost compared to what just the stability I think he provides.
I also think Mixon ends up on a lot of our teams.
That's probably, Andy. Yeah, he has. And is there a sleeper running back you think can climb into the top 24 that we didn't get to talk about on the running back shows? You know, is it Javonte? Is it ETN? Is it Damian Harris?
I'll take the first round running back with an undrafted free agent. I'll take Travis Etienne.
And I think by the end of the year, Javonte Williams ends up as a top 24 guy.
Man, who's my pick on this one? I think Chase maybe slips in too. Oh, I guess he's already in our top 24. That doesn't count. Etienne, I'll go with Jason's pick there. Wide receiver. You don't have to do much.
Right.
You just have to catch the football. And you can be – look at DeAndre Swift last year with 115 carries or something like that. So I want to thank Pristine Auction for supporting the show. Jason, you can get a Clyde Edwards-Helaire signed full-size speed helmet. What is happening? You've got Captain Clyde over here. You got Captain Eckler. You got Captain Gibson. Have you been watching some – Mike Wright?
He saw the success of Mike Wright from last year, and he wants in on that.
Well, I think a lot of those, Gibson certainly, but a lot of them, you know, might have disappointed, and now I'm like picking the right time to take them, which is this year.
$63 for that helmet right now. Ends on Friday night. Josh Allen signed jerseys up there for $31. All authentic autographs.
Yeah, Jason taking my guys, Andy taking my shirts. What is happening in this world?
Yeah. Burnt salmon.
Well,
is
I mean, they sing
color.
The song, right? You want to be, you want to be like Mike.
Yeah, heavy is the crown, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want a bacon neck on my shirt though. PristineAuction.com. Use the code Ballers, get a $10 credit. That'll wrap up today's show. Brooks, what do we got tomorrow? Quarterbacks,
top 10 quarterbacks.
Oh my goodness! Jason can talk about Sam Darnold tomorrow.
Woo! Oh, number one, baby.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast. Join our fantasy football community on jointhefoot.com and follow us on Twitter @TheFFBallers.